This is The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. Boxing Day bonanza at the Etihad. 9 goals, a stirring comeback, and at the end of it all, City win again and go 6 points clear at the top. Liverpool's postponement means Chelsea get the chance to go level with them. Is there a more unfair contest than Romelu Lukaku versus Matt Target? Arsenal are good and Norwich are bad. That's the conclusion from Carrow Road, while Spurs' decent form continues against Palace after the big will-it-won't-it go-ahead excitement of Christmas night. Ralph Hasenhüttl gets a win in his winter wear and Leandro Trossard scores the goal of the day. We've got The Guardian's top 100 players in 2021 to upset you if you haven't already read it and got really annoyed about it, and your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, live from Macclesfield, John Bruin.
Hello, Max.
Live from, I don't know, he's blurred his background, Jordan Jarrett-Bryan.
Season's greetings, all.
Hello, mate. And Simon Burton has done the same. But he did say in the WhatsApp group he's been spending most of Christmas playing No Scrubs by TLC on the acoustic guitar. So every hope that you will strum those chords for us at the end of the podcast. But you don't have to, Simon.
Yeah, I think hope is definitely the wrong approach to this. But okay. Yes, thank
we'll
you.
We'll see. Pac-Man says, can you make the pod 3 to 4 hours long, please, for those in Christmas isolation? Listen, we'll see what we can do. But yeah, our best wishes to anyone who is currently Christmasing at home, isolating because of Omicron spreading across the earth. Manchester City 6, Leicester City 3. City 6 points clear, 8 different goal scorers. It was like one of those games from that day on Boxing Day in the 60s that everyone tweets out with all those ludicrous scorelines. Every single clip on Match of the Day was a goal, I think. I think there was one chance, actually the best moment of the game, that Zinchenko to Bernardo to Sterling move that Schmeichel saved. But Leicester could, John, have made an amazing comeback.
Yeah, it appears Omicron has replaced 8 pints, suet pudding, Christmas dinner, in making these games crazy, doesn't it? Perhaps that's its one benefit. Manchester City have had some interesting games with Leicester over the years and have been quite frightened by the pace by which Leicester play. The problem of Leicester's play being that they leave the back door open, and they left it open, so they were 4-0 down before they started playing. But that was a thrilling comeback. But I don't think we ever doubted that City could just rev back up and score again. You know, from the moment De Bruyne scored in what felt like the first second, you knew that there were going to be plenty of goals flying in. This is the thing with Manchester City. They can go toe-to-toe with just about any team in any fashion they want, really. They're a tough team. And they can play attacking football. And if a team goes at them and tries to outscore them, they will outscore them. 6-3 on Boxing Day. You know, let's just say Pep Guardiola respects English football's finest traditions.
He does. He's not calling for the League Cup to be cancelled or a million substitutes. He's just saying, let's have all the goals on Boxing Day. I wonder, Jordan, if other teams can look at what Leicester did for that short period of time and see it as a kind of blueprint for how possibly to get something from City? Or is that just wishful thinking from someone who would like a title race?
Wishful thinking, I think, Max. It was a case of City taking control, asserting themselves, scoring some early goals, and then a little bit of complacency slipping in. I don't think there was a blueprint or a formula that I saw for anybody to look on and think, oh, Leicester did that, so we can do that. I think it was just literally, we're 2-3 up, we're a bit bored. Oh, hang on a minute, it's 3-2. Or, there's a couple of goals got in our goal. And as John said, City have the capacity and the ability to go again when it seems like they're under a bit of pressure. It was a fun game. I imagine it's a sort of game as well, sort of results that top managers hate. They hate lots of goals. They don't like not having control. And any game that has that many goals in it, you can never really have full control. So for us, it's great on Boxing Day, goals, goals, goals. But I bet for Pep Guardiola, he would have been, you know, stripping the walls in the dressing room there. I loved De Bruyne's goal, but I really liked Lookman's goal. The take, the touch, and the finish all in one action. That's a top quality goal. But
the work from Maddison before it and the pass from Ian Atcher, they were all brilliant.
It really was. And I think now we might be seeing, I mean, barring, you know, a COVID outbreak in the City team or crazy injuries, I think City may now pull away. I was on radio yesterday and Tony Cascarino, I was on with, he reckons City win this league now by 10 points minimum. So I think your desire for a title race, Max, I think has kind of come and gone, unfortunately.
Simon, do you agree? Are you in the school of Tony Cascarino? Do you agree with him and all he stands for?
Do I agree with him? City are an exceptional team and they are winning every game. And I mean, it's so hard to accuse them of being boring, but it would be a real shame for them to kill the title race as kind of beautifully and efficiently as they kill most of the matches they play in. Liverpool are the only team that can live with them. And I mean, we live in hope that we get some kind of fight. They are hard to stick with. And it's kind of hard. Like, I really want to dislike them. And I try. I do. But, you know, they basically play with five in attack, which firstly is so hard to defend. You know, you might be used to a back three. And I've seen City play at times in the last couple of months. And it's almost as if the defence is like playing a boxing match with against a guy with three arms, right? You're like, that's more arms than you're used to having to deal with. You're like, okay, I've got the left arm, I've got the right arm, so why the fuck am I now unconscious? Then that's what playing against City is like. Obviously, playing with five in attack and then the fullbacks pushing on is an inherently risky strategy. And as Leicester showed yesterday, if you can win the ball off them, you then have about 8 seconds to score a goal, give or take, before the door slammed shut again. Leicester did it a couple of times. And you've got to say, I think City scored with their first four shots. There are times when you've just got to say, I mean, you can't live with that, right? If that's what, if that's how efficient they're going to be with their attacking, you know they're going to spend time in attack. If that is how efficient they're going to be, there's not a lot you can do about it.
What's also concerning, I think, for the rest of the league, and definitely Chelsea and Liverpool, which I worked out yesterday, City, okay, we're in the second round now, playing everybody for a second time now, but City have played pretty much all the top teams away. They've played Arsenal away, they've played Chelsea away, Liverpool away, United away, Spurs away. They've played everybody away, and they're still 6 points clear. So I think Chelsea and Liverpool both have City in January. They're both going to have to go to the Etihad and win. And that's not a position I don't think you want to be in. So to be this comfortably ahead already, having played all the harder games away from home in the first half of the season, I think is an achievement in itself as well.
Jamin says, I'm undecided if we need to see the internal workings of Stockley Park, because it did cross to the back of Paul Tierney's head, I believe. Imagine cutting from it's up for grabs now and, you know... Keith Hackett is there all over the Twiglets, he says. It's a good question, but, you know, if they want to show it, they can. Yes, John?
I received one story on the inner workings of Stockley Park. A good friend of mine works in the building. And I think this was in the early weeks of VAR in the Premier League. And they were all sat in one room and he heard this great big crash because one named referee, I won't name him, dropped his dinner tray just before the game he was supposed to be doing kicked off. So I just have this image of them of all nibbling away as corners are taken. And
well, they just miss so in the second minute, they just miss a really bad decision because he's on the floor picking up his roast potatoes.
Yeah, exactly. And just pile of like dirty coffee cups around the TV.
Does anybody have any strong thoughts on Phil Foden and Jack Grealish not behaving as elite athletes are meant to behave, Jordan?
I wouldn't say strong, but I do have thoughts. I mean...
Sorry, what did they do, by the way, Jordan? Because it's kind of passed me by.
So, yeah, so they were given permission, as far as I'm aware, to go out. I think the whole Manchester City squad were. The issue was when they came back in for training the following morning, they didn't look like they were ready to train and go to put it politely. And Pep Guardiola was understandably upset about that. And I'm with that. I think there are so many good elements. There's a pressure to being a professional footballer. I get it. I totally get it, especially at the top level. But there's an expectation, I think, and there are privileges that come with being a footballer. There's so much good that comes with being a Premier League player. I don't think it's a big ask to be able to be expected to come into work on time and looking like you're ready to work. So if Jack Grealish wants to be the best player in the world, which I think Pep Guardiola wants him to be, you have to conduct yourself and do the kind of really boring small things really, really well, like coming in on time and coming in prepared to train, especially if you've been given time to go out the night before and enjoy yourself. So I think, more importantly for Grealish as well, Southgate will make a note of that too, because I don't think he's Southgate's favourite as it is. So you do the same thing repeatedly, then yeah, you're gonna get called certain names.
I recall a story. Steve Howie and Richard Dunn were at City and went on an all-night session and came in. Kevin Keegan was the manager. And I think Steve Howie very early on did the "I've pulled my hamstring." And so, you know, the physio got him away, so nobody noticed. But once Steve Howie had done that, Richard Dunn couldn't also pull his hamstring because people have smelt a rat. And so they just played by the side.
Fast as well.
Yeah. Well, they didn't pass it to Richard Dunn for the whole session. They were like, just keep it away from him. And then at some point, that someone just had to, in the rondo, pass it to Richard Dunn. And he just, I don't know, he just fell over backwards, just missed the ball completely from a five-yard pass. And they were all busted. But it was a different time, wasn't it? Let's go to Carrow Road. Norwich 0, Arsenal 5. Nick Ames was reluctant to call Arsenal good last time. Simon, how do we feel about them now? They've got a real flow to them, haven't they?
I think that you can judge teams for losing to Norwich, but you can't really judge teams for beating Norwich. They were poor yesterday, Norwich. They were really bad, and admitted as much. And the two Saka goals were rightly highlighted. You know, he's basically, his job is to cut onto his left foot and see whether he can get a shot away. And Norwich were like, there you go. And, you want to try again? Okay, there you go. It is a 5-0 away from home. It's a fantastic scoreline. It's hard not to get carried away by it. But and clearly, Arsenal are an improving team. They have quality young players. Smith Rowe came off the bench and scored again. There are plenty of valid and logical reasons to be optimistic. Let's not get carried away by this one.
Rich says, can Arsenal fans finally watch a match against most clubs in the league and not fear that the bottom is falling out? Or are they simply one Granit Xhaka rogue tackle away from an overwhelming sadness? You're Arsenal, Jordan. Are you? How many rogue Xhaka tackles away from overwhelming sadness are you right now?
Not far away from that, to be fair. I think somewhere in the middle. Arsenal on a great run of form at the moment, but the Everton result about a month and a half ago still scarred me. I still feel like there's an Everton-esque result somewhere down the line. I thought Arsenal were brilliant. You know, Norwich, I think it's hard to analyse Norwich because they're just not very good. And that is the depth of my analysis on Norwich. They're just not very good. So if you don't beat Norwich, I think I agree with Simon. I think that says more about you than does about them in that instance. But I think Saka was absolutely phenomenal. And I think that he deserves a lot of praise and credit for the way he conducted himself and got his head down after what happened at the Euros in the summer. I didn't have any concerns that he would return to Arsenal and kick on. And he definitely has kicked on. He's adding goals now to his ability to beat a player and provide as well. Emile Smith-Rowe can't get back in the team, but yet he's still scoring, which is brilliant. Martinelli's a live wire. Comparisons to Sanchez from some Arsenal fans. I compare him more so to Suarez. He just doesn't stop. He's very relenting in those diagonal runs into the box, and he just runs at you like a bull, which I love. But I'm still not convinced Arsenal will get fourth. I still think United will get fourth. And I think the test will be the Manchester City game that now is the next game for Arsenal, because the Wolves game has been postponed, which I think is a negative for Arsenal, because now they're in this groove. I think quick games for Arsenal is working in their favour, whereas I'm fearing now that Arteta might do a Pep, and in a time between now and the City game, overthink that game and start making changes that he doesn't really need to make. They're playing well, bar injuries, let them go again. So that for me is a test. If Arsenal get battered in that Manchester City game, I think we'll start to realise, actually, you are just bullies of the league and you can beat the teams, you know, from eighth downwards. But when it comes to a proper team, you're still not the real deal.
John, Martin Ødegaard is a delight, isn't he? I mean, he's Ozil-like in his movement. And I think that pass in the build-up to Smith-Rowe's goal was beautiful. He's just got a balance about him.
I think, you know, Ødegaard is, you know, a absolutely gargantuan talent. I think, and that's been clear, obviously, from him being a very young teenager. And I think if a team like Norwich grants him the space, he has the ability to cut teams apart with his passing. I'm not wholly convinced he's going to be an Arsenal great, but I do think that he is part of that proud tradition of Arsenal number 10s who are good, but never quite great. So you're thinking Alexander Hleb, you're thinking Riziki, Jordan could probably reel them off for me, the Russian guy, Arshavin, Cazorla, you know, just that Arsenal type of player. He suits Arsenal. But I'm not saying that he is the most winningest player of all time, but on his day, a delight to watch.
I'm not convinced that the Smith-Rowe goal was actually onside as well. I know they did the line.
No.
VAR lines were wrong, I thought. I thought they got the lines wrong. I think Smith-Rowe was just off, but hey, I'll take it.
I think they dropped the roast potatoes at that point.
Exactly. So. The pigs in blankets on the floor. Craig Pawson was just there hoovering them up. Producer Joel has given me some facts about Bukayo Saka, one of which I don't think anyone will repeat to anyone else. But, you know, he's put it in. He's done the work on Christmas, so fair enough. Aged 20 years and 112 days, Bukayo Saka is the third youngest player to score on Boxing Day in consecutive Premier League seasons after Michael Owen and Florence Cinema-Pongol. Saka is the second youngest Arsenal player to reach 10 Premier League goals for the club after Nicolas Anelka. So there you go.
By the person, sorry, Max, that I saw Sky bashing this graphic out over the last few days about the top scorers in the Premier League on Boxing Day. Am I like thinking that I was struggling for content, or is that an interesting stat? I just thought.
Well, I think we've got some more. No player scored more Premier League goals on Boxing Day than Harry Kane, 9, level with Robbie Fowler. I completely agree with you. Calendar year stats don't bother me, but specifically on Boxing Day, who scored some goals does seem unnecessary, doesn't it? That'll do for part one. Part two, we'll start at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Spurs 3, Crystal Palace 0. This was another impressive win. I mean, the weird thing about this game, Simon, was whether it was going to happen or not. And who is tweeting conspiracy theories at 11:30 on Christmas night about Crystal Palace games not happening? Surely you're either with your family or you're just really full and asleep.
The announcement of the Palace team was one of the funniest moments of the season, I think. There'd be all this, will it go ahead? Will it not go ahead? Palace desperate for it to be called off. And then you're waiting to see just how bad this dire situation is that made the game so close to unplayable. And then the team sheet comes out and they've made one change. And the guy who's gone out the team, he's on the bench. It's not like he's missing either. It was hilarious and astonishing. It's like there were so few games played yesterday in the Football League. So many cancellations. I thought it was hilarious. Obviously, Patrick Vieira was one of those who couldn't be there. And there were some first team players who were genuinely, you know, whether for COVID or injury or whatever reason, who were unable to play. But you've got to do better. I mean, even just for the sake of their reputation, they should have left a few more players at home and started a couple of kids. Because that was bad for them.
I really like the fact that I was on the radio when the game was declared on. And, you know, I said, that's breaking news, the game's on. And then I caught myself saying, you know, I could have done this to every game, every Saturday morning I've been on the telly or the radio. I could just announce breaking news. These games that were always happening are actually happening. It's not news, this. A ridiculous situation to be in. It's a bit like when Sky News, I remember Sky News breaking that Yasser Arafat had died. And then they realised he hadn't actually died yet. And then they did breaking news, Yasser Arafat hasn't died. You know, that's not breaking news. You just made a mistake. Anyway, Lucas Moura, John, is good, isn't he? I liked his interview at the end when he said, I'm a small guy, but I can jump. And if Conte can get the best out of him, then you suddenly have not just Kane and Son, but you have Kane, Son and Moura, and that is quite a potent strike force.
Yeah, that's right, because I think both Nuno and Jose Mourinho probably underused Moura for a player I think has such talent. And I think that Mourinho in particular just decided that his team was just going to be Son, Kane and nine other guys. Moura's always had that talent. He's been around quite a long time now. Yeah, the Conte revolution, such as it is, looks highly promising, doesn't it? Jordan talks about fourth place. I think Tottenham are in with a shout because they've got a manager who's got his team playing well, playing with confidence. I think Conte is a fantastic manager. I think that Manchester United not turning to Conte is going to turn out to be a big mistake. And it appears that Conte has thought, right, I'm coming to the Premier League to spite Manchester United. One of the ways he could do that is taking a top four place from him.
I think Moura as well has that. He's got over, I don't know if he's the fastest player or anywhere near the fastest player, but over like 3 yards, he's lightning. So he just can get away from player. And that's such a sort of vital skill to have. Jordan, what is Wilfried Zaha doing?
It's so idiotic. I mean, I thought for a long time that Wilfried Zaha has a maturity problem. I watch him play and he's always angry at everyone. If it's his own teammates, the opposition, the ref, even when he scores, he looks really angry and just like has an issue controlling his emotions or channeling them into anything other than anger. And this just was like, you're booked. And then what made it even weirder for me was that he was booked, he did what he did, and he looked at the referee to say, what's the issue? What? I'm like, dude, you've just thrown someone down to the floor off the ball. Like, what's wrong with you? So those are the sort of things I would heavily fine my players for, because it's just unnecessary and just dumb. It's just stupid.
It was nice to see Ossian Roberts, the assistant manager, as just somebody I haven't seen, and I know he was with Wales, but just a different person's face. It was just something nice to break up at the end, go, oh, there's a different man there, wasn't it?
But Max, is it a little bit like me in TalkSport, where because the main people, presenters, are having a holiday, they bring in the B team to do the job?
Breakfast over Christmas, when I was in that country, was my best earning time of the year. So, it's good to know your place, and just say yes to everything. On Conte, Simon, it's really quite impressive how different he's got this team playing. Does it just reflect well on him, or does it reflect... The one I really can't understand is just sort of how little they ran under Jose and then Nuno. Nuno came in and said, I want these guys to run less than they did under Mourinho. Like, that sort of seems completely mad.
The first third of the season, Tottenham were really terribly poor. The North London derby was puzzling more than anything else. Does it reflect well on Conte? Absolutely. But it also obviously reflects poorly on the people who managed the team before him. Kane was just hiding from attack for the first couple of months of the season. And yesterday, Lucas Moura gets played down the right, and Kane is just busting a gut to be there for the first time square pass. And I mean, that is pure centre forward play. And he was not doing that at all. It must just be such a relief for Spurs to see their quality players showing their quality, because it wasn't there. It wasn't there for a long time.
I'm no football manager, but I always wonder, like, it can be difficult, I'd imagine, to get players to kind of play a certain style of play, to do certain patterns of play, to be in shape for defensive sessions. But how difficult must it be for a football manager to get people just to run? Like, surely as a manager, to get people just to run, that can't be difficult.
Well, it's motivation, right? That's this idea, maybe, that, as I've heard, I think you said yesterday, John, they're terrified of Conte, right? which is, and they're not terrified of Nuno, probably weren't of Jose anymore, because, you know, they all know each other. So players who have got mates at Man United would say, oh, you know, you've got a rubbish one, you know, and that sort of, that key part is sort of quite hard to quantify, I guess. That's a sort of unknown thing that Conte has.
That stat, there was last week, that this season, before Conte's arrival, Spurs' average kilometres per match was, what, the 19th in the league? And since his arrival, it's the first. Mm-hmm. And that's the purest statistical distillation of managerial impact that I think I've ever seen.
Let's go to Villa Park. Aston Villa 1, Chelsea 3. I said it in the intro, John, but is there a more... I just thought Matt Target v Lukaku was just so totally unfair. Like, they just shouldn't have been in the same place on the same pitch. It was like, it was just sort of this sad, sad, tragic, you know, he's a totally sort of, you know, he's a decent professional footballer, Matt Target, but just Lukaku in his wake and him just trying to flailing around to try and get him was just... He couldn't even foul him. One of his mates had to foul him for him.
Yeah, I was going to say that the cons of foul was... I think my favourite aspect of that was that he complained to the referee about the penalty decision being given. I mean, it's like... It was like, come on, mate, you know. I really enjoyed seeing Lukaku at full flight. I've missed him because I do think he's great to watch when he's like that. And I think Chelsea have missed him too. That's apparent in the way that they've dropped away. Another game, wasn't it, that, you know, we were reintroduced to Gary McAllister. Now, we know him better, but no Steven Gerrard. And I think that's a good win for Chelsea because they were wobbling. And I do wonder, I mean, we don't know how much difference managers make. It's difficult to quantify. But you do wonder here's a question. Do you think players are afraid of Steven Gerrard? Because... He's not as wild-eyed as Antonio Conte. Very few people are. But I think Steven Gerrard in a grumpy mood must be pretty hard to deal with, you know, because as great a player as Steven Gerrard is and as promising a manager as he is, he carries that edge of, well, doom, doesn't he? He always has done, you know. I think his players just think, you know, he makes Ron Saunders look like Chris Akabusi. You know, he's just... and he's just got that sort of hangdog expression. And I think that can take him quite a long way because I think the players just don't want to see him in those depths of mood. And
I agree with John there. I think that the problem that Chelsea have made with Lukaku is playing him the same way United played him, which is a target man. I don't think Romelu Lukaku is a good target man, despite his size and his appearance. I think that what he did in the Villa game, he reminded me of how he played for Inter and for Belgium. He was coming wide, he was running at defenders. I think if you just use him as a pole, as a backboard in the box, I don't think you get the best out of it. I don't think he's a great target person. I think if you get him on the ball more, running at people, that I think is where Chelsea are going to have more joy with him.
I saw Chelsea a couple of times early in the season with Lukaku playing, and he was a strangely peripheral figure at the centre of their attack. I thought... If you'll have to bear with me here, that he reminds me a little bit of the French port city of Calais. In that, I know British people bang on about the war far too much, but in D-Day terms, Calais was where they expected the attack to happen, right? Obviously, it was going to happen in Calais. And so that's where they put their defences, and that allowed the attack to breach elsewhere. And Lukaku has been Chelsea's Calais for me at times this season. You assume that he's the focal point, but the actual attacking was largely happening elsewhere, kind of around him.
Could I therefore ask who is Timo Werner in this? is he sort of a muzzled gun that's locked somewhere?
So that leaves like your Havertz is and as Normandy.
Right.
Anyway, it's a little tenuous, but yesterday he came off the bench and he was the focal point. And it was good to see. And he's got a lovely header as well.
Hmm. Yeah, brilliant header. Reece James also scored a lovely header, worth pointing out. A header that almost would be impossible for a centre-forward to score. I mean, it was absolutely glorious, wasn't it? After the game, Thomas Tuchel, of all the managers saying things around whether football should happen or shouldn't, Pep was saying that people should wear masks in stadiums. Tuchel was just talking about having to play the game, saying it's not fair. We've all been in bed for 10 days. We play against teams who prepare with games postponed and who prepare with 1 week for these matches. They make us play all the time, even if we have COVID. We have new injuries and it won't stop. People at the green table in offices make these decisions. We're struggling. We're pressing our players. I have maximum respect for what the players did. We do changes because of injuries. We don't change for tactical reasons anymore. Does he have a point, John?
What's a green table?
A green table is a boardroom, I presume. I mean, I haven't spent a lot of time in. I haven't spent a lot of time in. I'm not. I've never been at a decision maker. I've never made a decision, I would suggest,
no,
in
mean,
my life.
No.
I've never seen a green table.
Green table for playing snooker on, presumably.
That is true.
I was going to say, they
that's what's happening. John Parrott is deciding what's happening in the Premier League.
They're playing a game of killer in there to work out which games go ahead. But. Now, that I'm not saying Thomas Tuchel's doing this, but there is an accusation that certain teams are trying this on a little bit. Maybe the Crystal Palace situation Simon referred to is one of them. It feels like certain teams we haven't seen for quite a while. We're speaking today. I think we're going to be reintroduced to the wonderful world of Manchester United, who we haven't seen.
Forgotten they're in the league.
Yeah. Who are they? Yeah, I suppose it's Chelsea's problem that they have too big a squad and that this is counting against them in terms of having games called off. I have some sympathy for that. And then again, I have no real sympathy for that. You know, if you build a club and you have so many players, one of the great shames of this was that I was really looking forward to seeing Lewis Baker play. And then, unfortunately, he got Omicron as well. So we can't see him. And, you know, I was actually there. The Athletic wrote a piece about how he'd played 8 minutes. And he played 8 minutes at Derby County in 2014. I'm happy to say I was there to see those 8 minutes. And I was really looking forward to seeing Lewis Baker. And we were denied him. So I just want to keep seeing the reserves. That's my hope out of all this stuff.
Did you see AFC Wimbledon's statement yesterday? I thought it was interesting and made some valid points. And theirs were fundamentally that they have put in stricter than required COVID regulations. They have asked their players to make sacrifices with their private and social lives so they can put a team out. And yet their games keep being cancelled. They have limited resources compared to many other teams in League One where they play. And if they are able to put teams out, then they would expect their opponents also to be able to do so. And there are no negative ramifications for those teams who are unable to fulfil fixtures. And how is it fair that having made their sacrifices to be able to put out a team, they have had their festive fixtures, which should be the most lucrative of the year. And generally, attendances are particularly high over this period. How come they have had their festive fixtures taken away from them without any ramifications for that happening?
Actually, the key, you need to have trust, right? You can't, so like Sunday League, you can't play if the oppo don't turn up. You can't play if the ref doesn't turn up. You know, all these things. And you need to have trust. So that the Crystal Palace thing is hilarious, but also slightly annoying because it does make you think people are going, oh, I don't really fancy this one today. And that might be unfair to Crystal Palace. I don't know the full story of that.
Yeah.
But there's no slack in the system. These games have to be played. You know, all these clubs, like Cambridge have got two games postponed. They've got COVID in the camp. I don't know how many players they have with COVID, but these games will all have to be played at some point, and the season can't end later because, well, I guess it. Look, I mean, who knows? There may be a lockdown. Then we don't know. But at this stage, it's difficult. I did hear one thing about Chelsea, which was you know, the Premier League at that level are looking at, you know, do you have enough players who've played games already? So for the teams that have given opportunities to some of their youngsters in some of their games, those youngsters are now viewed as sort of full members of the squad, as opposed to players who, teams who just stuck with their experienced professionals. So you could get done slightly, but I don't know. I guess a bit like everyone living in the pandemic, you've all got to try and be flexible, because if you keep trying to just make the system perfect for you, which is what all these sides will do, I guess, the season isn't going to finish. I have finished. I've spoken. There we are. Everyone, just do your bit and get along. Max for Prime Minister. That'll do for part two. Part three will start at the London Stadium. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. West Ham 2, Southampton 3. First win in 7 for Southampton. West Ham now 7 points off 4th. I think this was a really good game, Jordan. And there were lots of goals. It was quite exciting. You know, they've got, you know, Southampton got Broche. He's a really good player. And then El Yunusi played well. I really enjoyed Dawson's foul on Broche when he was running through. Quite hard to know whose foul, which was most blatant penalty of the day between that one and Konsa's. But well done to Southampton, eh?
No, good win for them. I can't work out now, having championed him for a couple of years, someone I thought should be at a higher level, I can't work out if Hasenhüttl is a good manager or not. He seems to flip between, he's taking Southampton down, they're gone, he's not that good. And then the next minute, he shows me that he can form a team, he can win games I didn't think he could win. I'm in a weird place with Hasenhüttl after like I say, being a big supporter of his. Great win for Southampton. I'm also wondering if James Ward-Prowse now is that good a set-piece taker, he's worth signing on that alone. So at my club, Arsenal, where we have a couple of good set-piece takers, I'm wondering if he's that good, he's worth 25, 30, 40, you know, 35 mil, because he's that good just on signing. He's someone that really is standing out for me. And there's a lot of surprise about West Ham's, you know, dip in form, and I don't understand why. West Ham's squad is not that big, it's not that great. This was always going to happen. They were never going to finish fourth. I think a top six fight for them now is the best they can expect. Getting knocked out of the cup, the Carabao Cup last week, I think was a massive blow. That was something I think they would have secretly really had their eyes set on trying to win. But I think it was a good game. But one, I think, that shows us that West Ham now are in the European fight as opposed to a top four fight.
Sure. And look, they're doing well in the Europa League, and they are without most of their defence, right? Cresswell, Ogbonna, Zouma, like your good players are important, especially at that level. James Ward-Prowse, by the way, 10 penalties, 11 direct free kicks, only the fourth player to score 10 or more Premier League goals via both penalties and direct free kicks. Would anybody like to, big Christmas quiz, guess the other three?
David Beckham.
Thierry Henry.
No. Thierry Henry, correct.
Ian Hart?
That is a great shout. I almost don't trust you, Jordan. I don't know why. That is absolutely brilliant. Ian Hart, Thierry Henry and Cristiano Ronaldo. So congratulations, Jordan. You've gone up in my estimations.
Thank you. Thank you, mate.
Well done.
Well done. That's what you wanted for Christmas, isn't it? I did like Southampton at the end going over to the crowd to do the, you know, three sort of cheers with go, you raise your arms, and they just didn't do it with conviction, and like some did it and some didn't, and it was a bit like, oh no, this is a bit eggy now for everyone involved, for the fans and the players, and it's just like, yeah, just, you know, it's a decent win, but it, I don't know if that was important necessary enough.
They're just out of practice.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. First one in 7, they haven't done it in training. You know, you can't recreate it. You can do it in training when you go up to nobody, but when the pressure's on, you know, it's like going out of the MCG with 1 hour left, isn't it? You know, you can have as many nets as you like, but that isn't Mitchell Starc and Pat Cummins. Brighton 2, Brentford 0. This goal from Trossard, John, was just so delightful, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah. And I think it's Trossard scored the goal against them back in September. Brighton's finally win. It feels like Graham Potter has been the most praised manager whose team haven't won a game for months that I've possibly ever seen. So And, you know, listen, I am an admirer of Graham Potter, of course I am. A brother in beard. Neil Maupay scored a good goal as well, didn't he? Against his old club. A sort of half-hearted non-celebration as well.
I found that really funny because I think he was thinking, that's a really good goal that I want to celebrate, but I'm not
going to. Wasn't Trossard's goal better than everyone seems to be reacting? I
was going to say, Max, you seem to think it was better than I did.
Yeah.
So
no? Is it not that good? Like a ball, controlling a ball over your head, not going with power, just dinking it on the volley. I don't think there are that many harder to strike. I'm only sort of 95% sure that's exactly what he wanted to do.
Maybe you're a guy who appreciates finesse in football as opposed to
in life.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Yeah, but you know, and Coldplay.
They're stopping making music. This is a devastating news.
Yeah, well, they're
vanilla music consumers like myself.
Well, they're stopping making records, but still touring.
Oh, okay, good. That's all right. What a relief. I mean, I'm not going to go to it. That would be awfully noisy, too many people. But like,
yeah, exactly.
They're going to keep the fans happy. Simon, did you not think this goal? Should I stop talking about Leandro Trossard's goal? Is this my Ethan Pinnock moment? I mean, it's better than Pinnock's goal that Barry said was.
I thought once he saw the keeper rushing out and making himself small, it became. I mean, I thought it was a nice goal that was made easy for him. There was a high margin for error, for all the prettiness you didn't expect, given the direction the ball comes from. A volleyed finish, but it was my second favourite goal of the game. I thought the Mopes was just great. Straight, no curl, no deviation, no messing around, top corner. That's where you're
going. There are so many goals. There are so many goals like that. You know,
not by Neil Maupay, unfortunately.
Not by Neil Maupay, no. But there are so many goals. You know, that was very much. You know, that goal. You know, was very much like I can't do a World War analogy. That was what I was trying to do, but you know.
So I'm looking at the goal again now, Max, and it's a good goal, but I'm not convinced he's trying to do that as well. But
I'm very easy to have my mind changed, so I take it all back. And, ignore what I said in the introduction. Look, we talked a lot about the games being postponed. So Wolves game at Arsenal Tuesday, that is off because of COVID. Wolves, Leeds game against Villa on Tuesday, that has been postponed as well. The EFL, as you said, one of you said, absolutely decimated, hasn't it? Oddball says, why is a game called off last minute after 3,000 fans travel 125 miles plus home fans? The EFL and Hull have cost a lot of people and players a lot of money, wasted a day over Christmas. I mean, this is happening, you know, late games cancelled. My instant reaction is to be, you know, sort of furious. But do we have to be a little bit more sympathetic to clubs? Because, you know, they have PCR tests that come in on the morning. You know, we need to try and play the games or do we need to be furious about this?
And there were 9 games in the Football League yesterday in 3 divisions, which illustrates how hard and how drastic the situation is. And certainly, last-minute cancellations are extraordinarily inconvenient. And the travelling fan is a kind of glorious phenomenon, particularly on Boxing Day, where it can be a real hassle to get anywhere by public transport. The travelling fan is a beautiful, wonderful thing that exists in British football and not in every football culture. And credit always for them. But only 9 games were on yesterday. We're in the middle of something that is extraordinarily hard to work with in current rules and regulations. So I think you've got to give them a pass.
Yeah, I agree with Simon, yeah. These are extraordinary times and it's very difficult. I feel sorry for the Rovers fans that went all the way down the M62. I hope they found a suitable pub and maybe watch a fairly depleted Soccer Saturday or whatever its equivalent was. And actually, one thing I would say, I don't know if any of you lot have had this experience, where you go to a game and it's called off.
Oh, it's much better than the game happening.
In a way, yeah, it's a right laugh. Yeah, so we could look at it in that way. So, yeah. I mean, the other one that I have done is, you know, going to a game and then that one's called off and then turning around and finding another game in the general area, which is one. But unfortunately, that wasn't possible under these conditions. But yeah, I think Sam is absolutely right. This is a situation that football is trying to find its way through. The last thing they want is the season to stop, like last season, because it was so... It wasn't last season, it was the season before last. We've been at this so long. Because it was such a doomy prospect. We're at this point, aren't we? You see fans in the stadium and you begin to think, is that okay? When you look across Europe... Yeah, there isn't really an answer to this situation apart from sitting, waiting, hoping that it finishes soon.
It's not totally related, but the Blizzard tweeted out a brilliant, and you may have known this story already, you guys probably do, but a few days ago, and it was Christmas Day, it was tweeted out. On Christmas Day in 1937, Chelsea and Charlton played in thick fog at Stamford Bridge. The visiting keeper, Sam Bartram, stood in his goal, believing his side to be all over the hosts, before a policeman came to tell him that the game had been suspended 15 minutes earlier. A lovely story, isn't it? Now, the Guardian's top 100 players of 2021, male players, Robert Lewandowski, top of the pile, Messi second, Salah third, Benzema, Jorginho, Mbappe, Haaland, Ronaldo, Kante and De Bruyne making up the top 10. Jordan, are you furious?
No, that feels about right to me. Somebody out there will be furious, just so you know about it. But no, not me. I think over the calendar year, I think Lewandowski's numbers are insane. He was, you know, was harshly bumped out of a Ballon d'Or last year because of the pandemic. This will be a, you know, small consolation for to him. But no, I'm largely happy with that.
Harry Kane, I thought, did well to get 15th. On the calendar year, I suppose, you know, he led England to the final of the Euros, but hasn't had his...
He did have most goals and most assists in a Premier League season, which is an extraordinary achievement.
Whereas very good point.
Jorginho, for example, is fifth, having basically been, what, the fifth best player in two good teams.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily make you the fifth best player in the world.
Yeah, Jorginho is the one that stands out for me. Jorginho is one, isn't he? Because the Chelsea team didn't have a great deal of stars, and because the Italy team, again, was a team without stars, you choose one of the players, don't you? Remember when Bayern won the Champions League a few years ago and they decided that Frank Ribery would be their star man, even though there were players in the team that would be their best guy? So Jorginho is, I suppose, a cipher for those Chelsea and Italy teams. But you can't tell me Jorginho is the fifth best player in the world, because I'm not having it.
No. Okay. I think that's probably fine. And look, he missed his penalty in the shootout, then against England. And, you know, if those penalties go the other way, well,
yeah.
It's a very different, it's a different evening in my flat, John, isn't it? For a start.
The smile would have been wiped off Barry's face.
Absolutely.
Phil
Foden 25th, Mason Mount 27th, Raheem Sterling 29th, Declan Rice 59th, Jack Grealish 61st, Donnarumma the highest rated goalkeeper at 12th. Only players outside the major European leagues are Julian Alvarez 91st from River Plate and Sebastian Allaire 93rd for Ajax. And we can just about get Allaire in there. He's had a wonderful Champions League run, hasn't he? Shirt Cobain says, what is the worst sport to get absolutely battered at? I mean, most of the questions this morning were about cricket. Cricket can't be enjoyable. Rugby, perhaps? You give the ball back to the team that just scored, he says. Simon, what would you say the worst sport to get absolutely hammered at would be?
Test cricket is 5 days long. And a series of test cricket is potentially 25 days long. And that's what makes it particularly brutal. You get hammered over a game of rugby. It's only like you're back home in a couple of hours. Today's the end of day two. They've got to come back tomorrow and do a whole day of being battered again. and then another one, and a one after that. And then
it may not be all that day.
Okay. maybe not all the five. And then they're coming back next week. I mean, that is really, Test cricket is, when it is balanced, is kind of the length of it, the stamina required of everyone involved, including those watching, adds to its beauty. But when it's one-sided, it is a mean and nasty, nasty thing to put someone through.
I'm going to go patball, because patball at school was brutal.
Patball?
Patball, you know, gets the ball at school. You didn't play patball at school. Maybe you called it something.
Called it something else, yeah. Okay, so talk me through the game. So tennis ball and hands, yeah?
Basically, you hit against the wall and, yeah, that's kind of the game, really. But the reason why it's brutal is because, well, my school anyway, it was very competitive. So if you lost, you were borderline bullied for the rest of your 5 years at school about that one. So that would, like, it's a five-year humiliation for the people.
Right.
I was thinking squash.
Oh, yes.
But squash in one of those where, you know, squash tends to be played by people working for high-powered businesses, isn't it? You know, so some games you have to lose because you're playing your boss. So you have to sort of play to a level, lose, but also
you have to let the green table guy.
Yeah, the green table guy chase you around. And the other one that I thought might be pretty rough to lose would be, and you probably know you're going to lose from quite a long way out, would be some sort of sailing race like the America's Cup or something like that, or, you know, around the world where you're just like, we're never catching them up. And we're going to be tossed around the Atlantic Ocean for the next 3 weeks or whatever. So, yeah.
Well, that'll do for today. Lots of you got in touch. I'll just read out one message from some fella. Hi, Max. Not a question, just a line for Baz. For those of you who aren't on social media, but listen, Barry's father died the day before Christmas. So he's not here for a few days. Some fella said, let him know that we, and I mean all across the world, are hand in hand with him today, tomorrow, forever. The Christmas pod is so much more poignant than words can give. Just make sure that git knows we love him. I had a FaceTime with him in the early hours in Ireland. It was my afternoon. He was well refreshed, I think I would say. But yeah, he's doing okay. And I know that he appreciates all the kind words that everyone, I think he's been slightly surprised by how many kind words there have been. But of course, we all love Baz, as you all do, or most of you all do. And he'll be back soon, no doubt. But, on behalf of him, if he would ever, and I don't think he'd ever let me speak on his behalf, to be honest. In fact, he'll probably hate this bit anyway and tell me I shouldn't have done it.
He won't have got this far.
Do you reckon? You're probably right. There we are. So I'm being emotional on his behalf. Thank you for all your messages. I'm sure he'll thank you when he's back on the pod. But in the meantime, John, thanks for your time.
Cheers, Max.
Thanks, Jordan.
Thanks, mate.
Cheers, Simon.
Thank you.
We'll be back, I don't know, actually, 2 days, 3 days, whenever some football happens. And we'll do a pod then. I think Thursday, Joel? Thursday, correct. We'll be back on Thursday.
This is The Guardian.